Blog Talk Radio.
Take a licking. There is someone waiting who will hurry up and rescue you. Just call for Super Chicken.
Welcome to the Mana Pro Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer Radio Show, where we give away more chicken coops and chicken-related prizes than anyone else on the planet. Often imitated, but never duplicated here on Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer. My name is Andy Schneider, but most know me as the Chicken Whisperer, author of The Chicken Whisperer's Guide to Keeping Chickens. My co-host is Pat Foreman, author of City Chicks, Chicken Tractor, and other great titles. Today is Tuesday, March 13th, and I would like to thank all of you for tuning in this afternoon on Blog Talk Radio. This is a live radio show that is broadcast around the world. This radio show is all about keeping backyard poultry, show poultry, and living a self-sufficient lifestyle. Each week, we welcome experts in their field to share their knowledge about different topics, including backyard poultry, show poultry, heritage poultry, gardening, cooking, and living a self-sufficient lifestyle. Again, we try to bring the experts on the radio show to share their expertise to try to eliminate the quackery and the other myths and rumors that are out there on other sites. Be sure to visit our website, chickenwhisperer.com, where you can follow us on Twitter and become a fan on Facebook. Once again, I would like to thank you all for tuning in to Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer, brought to you by ManaPro. ManaPro is committed to providing the best quality products that your animals deserve at a value you can appreciate. No matter the animal, no matter the product, you can be certain that ManaPro cares as much about the well-being of your flock as you do. So try one of the many poultry products offered at a retailer near you. ManaPro, nurturing life.
Since 1947, Randall Berkey has been providing quality products to their customers. They have everything you could ever want or need for backyard poultry. Feeders, waterers, medications, supplements, nesting boxes, and even coops. Visit them online at randallberkey.com and get 10% off your entire order when you use the coupon code WHISPER. That's randallberkey.com.
Critter-Cages.com is your one-stop shop for all your critters' housing needs. They stock a wide selection of supplies and equipment for rabbits, guinea pigs, hamsters, mice, rats, ferrets, chinchillas, chickens, and other small critters. Their chicken selection includes chicken barns, chicken coops, and chicken yards from top manufacturers. Your critters will love their selection of quality products, and you'll love their low prices. Visit them online at critter-cages.com. That's critter-cages.com.
First State Vet Supply is your one-stop shop to keep your birds healthy and happy. They have a wide selection of medications, vaccines, vitamins, wormers, and much more. Every product comes with specific directions and doses for your small backyard flock. Have questions about a sick or injured chicken? Take advantage of First State Vet Supply's Ask the Chicken Doctor program. For just $25, you can have a personal phone consultation with Peter Brown, also known as the Chicken Doctor. The consultation fee is waived if you purchase a product from First State Vet Supply. Visit them online at firststatevetsupply.com. That's firststatevetsupply.com.
Hi, I'm country music artist Nathan Osmond, and you're listening to Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer.
And the mighty bird against prejudice continues his fight for law and order. So when you hear that cry in the sky, you'll know it's Super Chicken.
Alrighty, thank you so much for staying with us today on Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer. We broadcast here Monday through Friday, live broadcast that is, from 12 p.m. to 2 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. So we're so glad that you can join us today. Looking as slowly but surely, the chat room is filling up. We've got a Miss Action Figure. We've got Andreas listening live again from Norway. We've got Dragonfryer, Easy Rider, many guests in the chat room. We invite you to go ahead and please register so then you can come on in, sit a spell, have a great time, meet some new friends, and talk chicken and then get your own unique, fun, and creative screen name like the rest of us. Or you can just sit there incognito and spy on us. We know who you are. And then we've got Kansas, we've got Ken, we've got Lori, we've got Vanessa, and we have Walter in there. So thank you very much for coming in the chat room. And as it slowly but surely fills up today, we do have a great show lined up for you today. It is the second Tuesday of the month, which means we have a regular guest. Yep, you guessed it. The American Livestock Breeds Conservancy. The American Livestock Breeds Conservancy. And Jeanette Behringer is going to be here with a topic she's going to be talking about today. And, of course, we've got my co-host, poultry advocate, author, compost queen herself. Let's bring her, let's give her a great big welcome. It is. Pat Foreman. Hey, Pat, thanks for joining us today. Good to have you back.
Hey. Yeah, thank you. Good to be here, as always. It's always fun to come on the show. Boy, today is Terrific Tuesday.
Yes, it is.
It is Terrific Tuesday. You'll never guess what I just did.
Now, wait. Did
you
did
will
it,
never guess this one, I'm sure.
Did it involve coffee?
No. I'm caffeine-free for the last 4 days. So I'm cute. I feel like I do deserve an applause on that. Boy, I tell you, that caffeine can just grab hold, can't it? It's pretty amazing. But nope. I it's not the caffeine. I'm back to now a quarter of a half a cup, somewhere between a quarter and a half a cup on Friday with a bagel. And that's my only bread for the week too. So I really look forward to it.
That's your only bread for the whole week is a half a bagel
yeah.
on Fridays?
No, it's a whole bagel, but half a cup of coffee.
Gotcha. My
and I dip the
goodness.
Bagel in the coffee. Yeah, I know. This low carb, I just feel so much better on this low carb approach. It's serving me well, but I love bread. Oh my God, those French breads.
Okay, what
but you're
did
distracting
you...
me. What did I do just before the show? And I couldn't believe I was doing it just before the show.
You were
and
tilling.
It's hot here. I'll give you. It's hot here. I mean, it is so hot. I got on shorts even.
You were tilling your garden.
I was not tilling.
You were not
but the truth is, the truth is I am tilling my garden because I can look outside my office window here right now and I see my chickens are tilling my garden.
There you go.
I've got a space where they're taking down the cover crop and they're tilling it in and so I don't have any noise pollution or oil consumption, low carbon footprint, happy chickens. What a good life. And I don't have to do a thing.
That's brilliant.
But it does help with the tilling, what I did.
So tell me. Oh, it helps with the tilling.
Well, sort of.
You tell us.
Okay. This is the first time. Well, you did come up with something, did you? I went around, and I've got a new micro-livestock plan. I think I'd mentioned this before, but it's working really well. And what I do is I just go around and I collect all the stink bugs that I can find, and then I stash them in the freezer. And then when it comes time to just fill up the jar again, I guess, I just dump them out in the chicken run, and they just go after them like, oh, boy, they're candy to those guys. So I figure not only am I helping with pest control, but these guys are everywhere, but also feeding my chickens. So I was running around with my little jar, flicking off stink bugs into it to feed my chickens. How bad is that? Yeah, I'm so grateful they don't bite and they don't sting. I'm
there
really
you go.
Grateful for that. Yeah. There are many things to be grateful for. That's one.
But
so what are you doing today? So much for my high life activity.
Oh, my goodness. Let's see. Well, the fence contractor showed up, and we started pulling fence. And
fence?
And so on one side, yeah, the whole front is complete. Gate, everything. The front is done. Now we've got two sides in the back. And he got about half of one side pulled with the wire fence, and then it comes raining. So I just heard him knock on the door, and he was talking with Jen, and they're calling it a day because more rain's supposed to move in over the next hour or two. Just good rain showers that I'm not going to be sending away because we definitely could use it. And so he'll be back tomorrow morning, and we'll hopefully tomorrow, based on Mother Nature, we'll be able to get the other three sides completely pulled and tacked, and then we'll just slowly but surely continue over the next couple of weeks getting the long wooden rails up on the outside of the wire to decorate it up and make it pop and the whole nine yards. So since I don't have fence work to do this afternoon, there'll be plenty of things to do here around inside of the house if it's raining, that's for sure, and I've got some work to do. We have chosen, we're in the process of getting everything finalized, but the judge has chosen the winners of the Carefree Enzymes photo contest. Now, this is basically the photo contest to put all other photo contests to shame, and that's exactly what it is. They have a new product out called Best of Show, and it's like a little briefcase, and inside it has several things, but it has five different bottles.
Pardon me.
Five different bottles of stuff, if you will, product, and they needed some pictures to go on these bottles. So what a cool prize. And we had over 400 photographs submitted with this contest, and we only promoted it for about 3 days, maybe 4 days. And we had over 400 photographs. We had an American Bantam Association judge who actually went through, and we told him, don't judge like you would judge at a show. You can only do that anyway with a picture so much. So just, you know, take a look at these 400-plus photographs. Tell us what, you know, your top seven favorites are. I think it was maybe the top five favorites. And then we will announce. So we're hoping that we'll be announcing the winners later this afternoon. I don't know why I'm yawning this morning, Pat. So
was that a yawn?
That was a yawn.
Well, wait a minute, I'll give you my sympathy yawn. I usually, whenever anybody yawns, I'm right after them.
Everybody out there listening is going to be yawning. So, but hopefully this afternoon, I'll be able to announce the winners. Now, what kind of awesome bragging rights is that? I mean, we're not talking about a cheesy calendar here. We're talking about a picture of your chicken on a retail product that's going to be marketed nationwide on these Carefree Enzymes Best of Show. I mean, we're going to have, you know, folks that show their chickens. We'll see your chicken. Every time they pull out whatever they're going to be using, they'll see a picture of your chicken. So what a cool, cool prize that would be. Talk about bragging rights. And everybody who wins also is getting a free gift from Carefree Enzymes. So I've already seen the winners. They're kind of getting everything finalized, and then hopefully after the radio show we will be able to announce the winners. But that's some serious bragging rights there. The photo contest to put all others to shame. We're very proud that they chose us to offer this contest, and but it was awesome. It was absolutely awesome. So I'm anxious, and I'm sure a lot of others who entered are anxious to see if their chicken is going to be featured on a retail product.
Mm-hmm. Awesome. That is awesome. Way to go.
So hopefully that'll take place today. I'll be working on that a little bit this afternoon. And, of course, I'm going to come up with a different chicken coop contest. We did password collection last couple of times. I'm going to try to be real creative and come up with a new chicken coop contest. Yep, folks, we're giving away another chicken coop. I know it's hard to believe. We've been broadcasting. This is our fourth year of broadcasting, and we've given away a boatload of chicken coops. And we've got another chicken coop that we're going to be giving away in April. So I'm going to come up with a different and creative way to do a different contest for that and still try to keep it where people on Facebook, Twitter, and the radio show listeners, both live and archive, can actually have a chance at winning this awesome chicken coop from MyPetChicken.com. So we're really looking forward to that coming up in April. and everything else. I'm going to try to get a guest tomorrow. You know, the second and fourth Wednesdays are open, so we'll be I'll be looking and probably inviting a couple of folks to come on for tomorrow's show, which we're looking forward to, and then maybe having a Facebook fan contest or two. So we'll just have to see how that pans out. And so, yeah, there's always plenty to do around here, the homestead and, of course, work as well. So, nonetheless, we'll be doing that. Hey, guess what?
What?
Looks like that Jeanette Behringer just called in. So I'm going to get over here to the phone lines, and we're going to welcome her on the radio show. It's always great to have Jeanette on the second Tuesday of every month. Folks, the American Livestock Breeds Conservancy. Become a member. They do great works all around the world. You know, they've got, you know, saving the heritage breeds, working with heritage breeds, developing programs, traveling all over the country. I already have my calendar. I will be joining them in Raleigh next November. Can't wait. I hope Steve Pope, the heritage chef, will be there. Hint, hint. And maybe we can invite him to get there. I'd love to meet him and shake his hand in person. And maybe he can cook up an awesome dish for us. Would love that. And, of course, I already told him if he goes that I'll bring the secret ingredient, which would be, of course, Italian salad dressing. So,
right off the shelf.
Off the shelf, yep.
But the best of the best.
The best
Italian dressing.
Newman's Own. Okay.
Newman's Own.
I will bring that. So I told him that. I said, if he comes, if he's invited and he can show up and prepares a dish that yours truly, that I would bring the secret seasoning, which would be and marinade, which would be the Newman's Own Italian salad dressing.
Oh, boy.
I know.
Yum.
I'm hoping to attend there. And you can visit them online and see what they're all about as we welcome Jeanette at albc-usa.org. albc-usa.org and see what they're all about and see if you may have any heritage breed chickens that may be on the critical list that they have there.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's now time to bring on our good friend Jeanette Behringer. Welcome back to the show. It's another month.
I can't believe it already. Where is the time flying?
I know.
It goes fast.
March
yeah.
is, I mean, I think March, but March is really about halfway gone.
Well, around here, March is all about basketball.
Oh, yeah.
Exciting times for our colleges.
Yeah, absolutely. Do you have any favorites up there? Tar Heels, Duke?
Well, you know, my daughter is a Duke fan, and I kind of lean towards State just because we work with those folks all the time, and they're just fabulous folks at that school. But I try to remain neutral because people get pretty excited about their teams around here. So I concentrate on the chickens right now and the horses.
And the horses, yep. And that's our topic today, I believe.
Yeah, I think if we could talk about the Marsh Tacky Project, because this weekend I'll be up in Hilton Head for the annual bee tree holdup.
Oh, my. That's
yeah,
already.
Right?
That was so much fun last year. Just seeing the pictures gave me chills.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun. You know, we're expecting about 10,000 people to show up for it. And, you know, it's just a bunch of not particularly fast horses running down the beach, but people love it. And, you know, they're
not particularly fast, huh?
Yeah, you know, tackies, we never claim that tackies are particularly fast horses, but they're incredibly interesting horses. And I thought, given the annual event, that it'd be a kind of interesting time to talk about, you know, how a breed conservation project works and how it, you know, mm-hmm. as we get into our seventh year of working with this breed, how all the actions that were happening early on have had consequences down the line. And it serves as a good role model for other breeds that are in trouble and need some attention brought. And they're, you know, as you know, Pat, I've got some tackies at home, so they're near
mm-hmm.
to my heart. Hopefully I'll have a third one in a couple of weeks. We're on
Aww.
Baby watch now, so.
No, nothing cuter, I think, than a foal.
Oh, yeah. Unfortunately, the last time I had one fell on the day I was supposed to be on the Chicken Whisperer show.
Yep.
Had to cancel.
I remember that, yeah.
That
yeah,
was good,
yeah.
a good reason to cancel. I can't think of a better one, quite frankly.
Yeah.
But I mean, there are priorities in the world.
There are. But, you know, the breed, for folks that don't know much about them, because probably very few people outside of the low country of South Carolina, which is the kind of swampy, wet type of terrain around the coast of South Carolina. It's really tough country, and that's exactly where the tackies come from. And, you know, everybody gets a real giggle about that name tacky. And the word tacky has actually changed over the decades or centuries from meaning one thing to another. And back when they first got their name, a marsh tacky was basically a common horse of the swamp. And so, you know, tacky at the time meant just common. And so that's how they got their name. It's not, you know, a modified Gullah word. It's not a modified Native American word. It just meant they were the common horses of the area. And interestingly, all the Spanish horses from Florida all the way up to, you know, even Chincoteague, back in the colonial period, all those horses that were drop-offs or shipwrecks, you know, on the different coastal islands were all called tackies.
And really? I didn't know that.
Yeah. I found a lot of literature that refers to horses from all of those areas as tackies. But as time went on, each population kind of developed its own character and evolved separately from the other populations. And so all these horses became, you know, individual strains, and you have like the Banker horses, the Marsh Tackies, and the Florida Crackers are the three groups that are left of all those original Spanish horses from the colonial period, and they do vary quite a bit. You know, the Bankers are certainly different looking, size-wise, few other things different from a Marsh Tacky. And, you know, the Florida Crackers look a lot different, too, in that they're more refined and they're more gated. But genetically, they're all fairly similar, but they've evolved separately over hundreds of years, so they're kind of strains unto themselves at this point. But the Marsh Tacky came to our attention about 2005. And we had thought that these horses were extinct, but Phil Sponenberg, who's our technical advisor up at Virginia Tech, he had got contacted by some of the Florida Cracker horse owners, and they had let him know about a population of Spanish horses that was still in South Carolina. And so Phil and I and Margie Bender, who was with us at the time, decided to head down there and investigate the population. And the first place that we had gone to, a really great gentleman, Ed Ravenel, who's the brother of Arthur Ravenel, for people that know anything about South Carolinian politics, Arthur's quite a fixture in South Carolina. And Ed had a small population of them, and one look by Phil's eye, and he knew that there was something special here and that they very strongly looked like Spanish horses. And that visit really kicked off this project, because, you know, we went there, we saw the horses, we, you know, analyzed them for phenotype and really started building a case that this could be something interesting. And so we pulled hair samples on those horses, and Ed was like, well, you know, I know somebody else with horses up the road. And so we started farm hopping, and that set off a series of field investigations that took about 3 years total. And about, I think I put about 40,000 miles on my car those 3 years.
Wow.
And we tried to document every one of the horses that were left. And when everything was said and done, we had found about 150 of them left. And a bulk of those, like about 90 of them, were on one farm, which we ended up going to see a couple of trips after Ed. And that was the farm of D.P. Lowther. And he's an old gentleman that had been collecting tackies for years. And he very seldom sold any because he wouldn't trust anybody with any of them because he grew up with them. They were very special to him, and he just didn't want to sell. And, you know, I love DP. He's a great guy. It takes a while to get to know him and him to get to know you. And, you know, through working with him over a period of years, we've really developed a friendship and an open dialogue about the horses. And, you know, he's selling horses pretty regularly now. And, you know, the big part of this whole story is the people as well as the animals, and that it couldn't have happened without the cooperative effort of everybody, even those people that could be harder to work with or didn't want to share their horses. We were able to convince them that in order to save a breed, you really have to work as a group. No one person can do it, and when only one person thinks they can do it, then ultimately, you know, that breed can be doomed to fail if that person happens to pass and their family doesn't want to carry on, which happens more often than we'd like to talk about. And so, you know, as we were doing the field investigation with these animals and collecting DNA samples from every horse we could get our hand on, and we ended up testing almost all of the 150 horses we found. And we worked with Texas A&M University, Gus Cothran down there. He's a geneticist, and he ran all the samples for us and was able to determine that, yes, this was its own breed of horse, and that they were genetically unique enough that they warranted conservation. So that was the good news. We also had corroborating evidence from the University of Cordoba in Spain. And anytime we're working with a breed that may be of Spanish origin, the folks over there are wonderful in running the samples for us because, of course, they're very interested in Spanish breeds. And so they also were able to confirm that these horses were genetically distinct. And so, you know, we got to the point where, okay, we found the horses, we've done the testing, and we know they're special, and so what's the next step? And that was where pulling in the people was the important part. And so ALBC was able to pull together all of the known breeders. Let me step back. Before we had a formal meeting, one of the breeders, David Grant, was able to have an open house at his place, and he had about a dozen tackies there, but he invited everybody that we knew of with the horses to come and just meet each other. So it was kind of like a party and you know, really informal. And a lot of these folks had never met each other before. They've only heard them like, oh, that's Lowther, you know, those are his horses, or, you know, McKenzie horses or Gohagen horses. But people had never really met those people and just knew them by name. So that was a really important step towards making an attempt at doing something a little more formal. And that's where ALBC came in, and our friends at the Coastal Discovery Museum in Hilton Head gave us the facilities to hold a formal meeting and talk about the findings of the research. And that's when we proposed creating a breed association. And then we followed up about, either 4 or 6 months later, and had another formal meeting. And it was there that we were able to have a breed association formed. And they, you know, got their officers at that time. And, you know, and you got to understand, you know, a lot of these folks actually had some, you know, family grudges going back generations. So I still find it amazing that they're able to do as much as they can, you know, given the, you know, original stumbling blocks we had. But, you know, the association's been up and running for about 4 years now. And, The races this weekend are actually a result of the association trying to promote the breed. And it's been a very great success for promoting the breed with these races. And we had no idea what we were in for when we first started them. And we thought, you know, maybe a few hundred people would show. And the first time we did it, we had 3,000 people show up to see these races. And now we're up to about 10,000. You know, it's just wacky how many people show up. And the city of Hilton Head actually had to change the town ordinance so that we could go on a bigger beach, because the original beach couldn't hold that many people. And it was the only beach where you were allowed to have horses. And so the city had to change the town ordinance to allow the tackies to run on the biggest beach, or the widest beach, which is Coligny. And it's really been a great promotional tool for the horses. And, you know, we're now starting to have some things associated with the races. Like we have this year we're having an official tacky hat contest. And, you know, they're kind of making the races almost derby-like, you know, and people are really getting into it. We actually have numbers on the backs of our riders now, it's just a great time for everybody. We also have a bunch of horses that are just there for meet and greet. You know, not everybody's racing, and I know this girl isn't going to be racing. I'll just
be your bread mare.
I just don't think I could stay on the horse like that anymore. I mean, they really tear off down the beach, but the other offshoot of the research was in documenting all those horses. We were actually able to put together a stud book, and now ALBC manages the registry for that, and we'll continue to do so for however long the owners want us to. But I guess the messages I want to, you know, kind of relay out of all of this is that, you know, breed conservation isn't straightforward or simple. You know, there are a number of key elements. There's, you know, identifying the population, you know, that's the discovery, and then you have to find a way to secure that population. And, you know, we did so through getting the owner's network together and, you know, creating the stud book. And then the other part, which is almost the hardest part, is the maintenance of that breed. And it's real easy to get people excited about a breed early on because it's new, it's rare. But, you know, after that newness kind of wears off, it becomes increasingly difficult to keep a breed popular or even sustainable. And you know, with the Marsh Tackies, we have no illusions they're going to overtake the quarter horse or they're going to, you know, be a big player on the horse market. But, you know, if we can envision a sustainable market for these horses that are so well adapted to their home of South Carolina, I think we've won that, you know, that battle, if we can get a sustainable market. So that's really, you know, what we're pushing with the horses right now, and making sure people aren't, you know, breeding new and improved Marsh Tackies. You know, they
right.
don't need to be improved. You know, they're adapted for the swamps of South Carolina. That's where they're good at doing their jobs. You know, if they get bigger, they're useless in the swamps. And if they're stupid and high-strung, they're going to be useless. And so, you know, part of what we did with the Breed Association is take a lot of time in defining what is a Marsh Tackie, and gave a, you know, an outline of what to look for in the horses and what should be considered a fault, without making that too stringent, because, you know, these animals, they did vary somewhat. You know, like Mr. Lowther really liked roan horses, or Mr. Ed, he liked, you know, buckskin horses. And so, you know, they're going to vary a little bit depending on the likes and dislikes of each farmer, and that's okay. But, you know, don't exclude a horse just by, you know, it looks a little off. You know, you need to look at the whole package of the horse. And this is really applicable even to chickens and to any other breeds, is that, you know, you have to be really careful when you're conserving a population that you keep in mind that some of the atypical animals may not be the biggest and the best, but they may represent genetics that overall are quite important to the population. And then you talk about the struggles of, okay, if they're not the biggest and the best, well, who's going to take their time to keep those animals if they're not the biggest and the best? So, you know, it's a real balancing job, and we don't have everything figured out in that regard, but, you know, we sure try our best, and we do have a few people that they do think it's important to keep those outliers, and thankfully that's worked pretty well for the marsh tackies, but, you know, with some of the, you know, the chicken breeds in particular, we've got, you know, some of the breeds out there that aren't very financially viable, and they're not the most exciting animals out there, or the some of them certainly aren't very profitable, but genetically they're quite important. You know, I got a call from a guy this morning who has some lines of birds that has been in his family since the 1930s, and he's got the breeding notes from then all the way to present day. You know,
wow.
And it's,
wow.
But it's with some, you know, strains of game fowl that, you know, how many people out there are willing to take on a major breeding project with game fowl? That's not for everybody. And these chickens, they're not your pet chicken. You know?
No.
Unless you want a bulldog, you know, or a pit bull. But, you know, it's going to be a real challenge to figure out how to work with these animals and get them into capable hands that really understand what it takes to conserve these genetics. Now, are they going to make any money off these birds? Probably not. But from a genetic standpoint, these birds are really exceptional. I mean, no outside blood since the 30s. It's like, wow.
Yeah. Dang. Really?
Yeah, yeah.
That's 80 years of 80 generations, just about, if you count a year's a generation for a chicken.
Yeah,
and
you know, we can't lose that. We absolutely can't. And this isn't the first instance we found. You know, there are pockets of chickens out there that just, you know, continue to blow us away with them being in families for generations. And so we're really challenged to try and do something about it. And, you know, this morning that gentleman, you know, he's retired. Yeah, pardon the pun, he's not a spring chicken anymore, and so he's worried about the future of what's going to happen to these birds, and that's why he came to us, and so, you know, we're still trying to figure out our next steps, but again, this is one of the challenges, is a bird that isn't going to be your backyard chicken and not particularly profitable, but very important, and so... Anyways, I thought that the marsh tacky led a good example in trying to show the big picture and the complexity of breed conservation. And, you know, I'm real proud to have been part of the whole conservation project. And just last year, no, year before last now, the marsh tacky has gotten so many fans, they declared it the State Heritage Horse of South Carolina.
Nice.
And we've been able to prove their role in the history of South Carolina. We actually know that the troops of Francis Marion rode marsh tackies during the American Revolution. And since, you know, we were able to come up with that documentation and revelation, the Daughters of the American Revolution now have a marsh tacky as their one of their members. And,
oh,
and,
privacy.
Yeah, the historians have been just tickled with all of the data we've been able to provide with the horses. And it's funny, it was right under their noses all the time, but because they weren't really thinking about breeds or, you know, any specifics with the animals, they were so focused on the people that, you know, they just kind of missed the animal side of things. And so it's been a lot of fun connecting with the historians to give them these revelations about the animals that the you know, the revolutionaries had used back in the day, and what really excites them is that they're still around today. This is living history. It's pretty amazing stuff. But
wow. Well, really, every breed that you track is living history there at the American Livestock Breed Conservancy. I mean, that's the beauty of it, is you're looking history right back at you in the face.
Oh, sure. And you know, I'm a history geek, so, you know, it's a thrilling part of the work we do for me personally. And I think it really, you know, that historical and cultural connection really helps to, you know, get people to feel that close affinity with certain breeds. And really, it makes you feel like part of something bigger in getting involved with
Absolutely.
These things. Yeah.
That's
so,
a great way to put it, Jeanette, is you're working with something bigger than yourself that spans the centuries, and hopefully will serve future generations just as well. So it's no small thing that you guys do, and then certainly with your work down there that you're doing. So here these marsh tackies, you know, almost became extinct, but because of some testing and some analysis, was able to bring them together into a recognized breed.
Yeah, well, and that and combined with, you know, a few of the old timers that just refused to let go of those horses. And so, you know, we happened to be at the right place at the right time because, you know, if we hadn't stepped in, who knows where they would have been today. I mean, I could say now we're past the 250 mark as far as live horses on the ground. And so, you know, all of that hard work on everybody's part has really paid off, and it's a good model for success for others.
Yeah. Well, and of course, it continues. You know, the other breeds that you're actively recovering, the one I know of is the chickens one, Java.
Java.
Steve Mose is working on.
Yeah, and we're really excited. That's coming along very nicely, and that's actually one of the cases of a couple interesting flocks we found. One of them being closed since the 30s, and you know, we've been able to recover those genetics as part of the recovery project, and this year we're expanding the number of farms that we're working with, and pretty much doubling them. And we're hoping to get a real good group of birds on the ground this year. Already the birds we have this year are better than the birds from last year. And I think next year we're really going to see some stunning birds coming out of all this because we'll be able to get some good numbers on the ground. But going back to your balancing act, we also have to take into consideration the genetics. And so we're very carefully monitoring who has what bloodline, and trying to make sure that we maintain the integrity of the bloodlines within the population so that the population doesn't become homogenized and everybody's related to everybody. And, and it's tedious to do that, and it's not the easiest route for breed conservation, but it's the necessary route that needs to be taken in order to ensure we've got that diversity. Because one of the things that the Javas really suffer from is inbreeding depression. And because we've been able to locate a couple of bloodlines that are not related to anything else, very carefully we can use that to help improve some of the bloodlines that maybe are having inbreeding problems. And so, really exciting stuff with the Javas. And we've been... you know, we finished evaluations on all the breeding birds this winter. And another thing we've been expanding with that particular project is going the DNA route. And for all the birds that we're evaluating, we're also pulling blood samples. And we're working with Virginia Tech, and we hope to have a good look at the genetics of the Java, which we haven't done with the chicken breed before. So
that's good.
Yeah.
Now, is the Java, is it being selected for mainly meat or eggs or dual purpose? I know the Buckeye had a little bit more emphasis on the meat side than the egg side.
Yeah, well, to start, but Buckeye, we didn't have to do much in the way of recovering for egg laying, because when we started, most of those were still doing about 150, 200 eggs, which is respectable for
dual purpose.
From the get-go, there wasn't a lot that needed to be done for egg-laying capacity, although when we evaluate the Buckeyes, we do evaluate for egg-laying capacity. And with the job...
Is that part of the records that are being kept by the Buckeye group now, is how many eggs they lay?
Well, we do it with the birds that are local here now. I mean, the Buckeye Project's to the point where... folks are flying on their own with them. You know, in the early stages when ALBC was heavily involved, and now there are just so many people putting out really good Buckeyes that...
There are. There are a lot of Buckeyes at the shows, too.
So we're hoping after several years with the Java that will occur with the Java breed as well. But, you know, it takes years to get to that point and a lot of cultivation and... You know, Buckeyes took a good 4 or 5 years before they really took off and were flying on their own. And pardon the pun. And, you know, they really are well on their way to having a good, strong following. And it's interesting. I was talking with Don Schrider today and actually passing off a Buckeye to him as he wanted one of his bullets. And, you know, he and I were talking, and Don really was the root of that project. And although I was heavily involved, everything I learned about chickens, I learned from Don. And he was the teacher through this whole process. And, you know, we were sitting back reminiscing about the project and how it all got started. And the whole project had a budget of $500 to start.
Oh, my.
That was it. And, you know, after buying scales for the original grow-out people, that was it for money. But we felt it was so important that ALBC continued to let us do the work and you know, the field work. And, you know, what we did really had great implications, far-reaching implications, more so than we ever thought. And, you know, Don and I just kind of laughed about where we were and where it's at, and you know, both of us couldn't be prouder of where the Buckeye is today and feel like we had a little something to do with it, but, you know, it's really quite pleasing to see where it's gone. And so we hope the same will happen with the Java, and that, you know, we can create some Java fans. And we're on our way towards that, and I think within the next 2 or 3 years we'll start seeing some exceptional Javas coming out there. But right now they're not ready for prime time. They're getting there. But
yeah. Well, I have another question for you, Jeanette, and I've kind of thrown this about to different people. But our Poultry and Garden Club might be interested as a club to take it on as a project. And I'm not sure they'd necessarily want to keep the birds, but certainly it'd be a learning project for them. And I know if you're still looking for grow out, that's basically what we do is we need to grow out. That might be something that we could pursue.
Do you have enough farms? After the show and see what we can do, because we're to the point now where we still have the ability to have some folks outside of this region get involved. We're so early on that we're trying to, you know, keep most of the grow-out birds within a reasonable driving distance, but this year we're actually sending some out of state and to different places, so that's definitely doable.
Yeah, and then, of course, along with that would be the whole learning curve of how to select them and what to really look for and that sort of thing. And then to give them back so that you could you know, use the best of the best to continue.
Yeah. Well, we'll talk.
Yeah, we can talk. There's no question. You and I get together. Well, the other thing I've been wondering about, you know, at the Indianapolis show, Dorkings, there were no Dorkings being shown. And and in the back they had 7, and I ended up bringing 5 back to give to the American Heritage Museum here. For their little program. So maybe if you're looking for one to do another, the next breed recovery, I think the Dorkings are really getting down.
Well, I think so, too. I think Craig Russell was talking about how it's really hard to find good dorkings out there. And
He's who I got them from was Craig. He had bought them, and then we have five of them to go. So, but anyway,
I think they're definitely needing some attention. Another breed that we're terribly concerned about is the Barred Holland. And that, there are a few out there, but not all of them are laying white eggs. And, we've done started doing a census on the Barred Holland, and I don't think we've found any white Hollands. We're not sure there are any anymore. And their population is quite low, so we're a bit concerned about that breed as well, but... You know, it's something like, if you have access to birds and you have the motivation to want to really, go above and beyond with that, ALBC is always happy to work with folks that want to take on a breed to, recover its productivity and get it, where it was back in its heyday, staying within APA standard, but, making productive birds. And we got approached by the Dominique Club. We're hoping to do that with Dominique's. They've expressed interest in doing that. And I believe my colleague Allison is working with some folks on Dorkings and Hollands. And, of course, we both work with Steve on the Javas. And so, there is some interest out there. And ALBC is here to help anyone that's interested in taking on that kind of job. But going back to that model with the Marsh Tacky, it's not a one-person effort, and you have to approach it from a number of different sides. It's not just a matter of getting a bunch of animals on the ground. It's the documentation. It's, networking with people that want them, and it's planning for their long-term survival. But it's a great challenge, but very rewarding, and it doesn't happen overnight, but that's the fun of it. If it was easy, everybody'd do it.
Well, so much of it, too, is just the cognition of it. I mean, I think we're really, there's a whole movement in the U.S. to come back to heirloom seeds and heirloom livestock because we realize the food supply isn't really what we necessarily thought it was, and that these meats can provide better nutrition as well as being beautiful. So,
yeah. Yeah, I totally agree. I think that it's a, I think it was Purina that may have just done a study, and they were projecting that chicken ownership could jump 50% over the next year or so.
How much?
I'll have to get the data for you because I haven't seen the hard data yet, but. Everyone is seeing this big boom in that, there's just no end in sight for people wanting to get backyard chickens and
50% or more. Wow, I believe it. I absolutely believe it.
Yeah, I'll get you the hard data when I see that. Yeah, we've been tossing some things back and forth, and I hadn't seen the hard data. But the projections were that they're booming and going to continue to do so. So pretty exciting stuff.
Yeah, well, hopefully, too, horses won't just sort of fade out as money gets tighter and tighter, if money goes tighter and tighter. I mean, they're not that expensive to keep, but...
I think dogs are more expensive than my horses, to be honest.
Oh, is that right?
and it's finding the right horse for the right situation. You know, with my horses, they're adapted to the heat, the humidity, and the parasites of the Carolinas, and so... I'm not fighting Mother Nature to keep that horse happy and healthy. They don't need a really, rich diet. And, they're actually happy with cow hay, and it keeps them, looking good and not fat. And, they're easy-keeping horses. And I truly believe there's the right horse for every person that wants one. You just have to, select it carefully. Same thing with chickens. Like I said, with these game chickens, they aren't for everybody, and maybe the Buckeye's right for everybody, but with the horses, I was just up in Virginia looking at Ocotecky horses, and beautiful, beautiful horses, an ancient breed. It's probably one of the oldest breeds of horse in human history and incredible athletic horses. Would I ever get one? That's too much horse for me. And they're not much bigger than my horses, but they're athletic, and I'm no athlete. If I was into eventing, that's probably the horse that I would go with. You know, the heck with those warm bloods and all those, you know, overbred, overpriced
show horses.
Horses are incredible athletes. And, I mean, they were basically developed to do desert raiding. They had to, you know, run over hundreds of miles over the desert with very little water and very little complaint, you know. They're just really tough horses, and they definitely need someone that knows how to ride on them. And, fit that horse with the right owner and look out. You know,
right.
They'd be a force to be reckoned with in competition. But
we have a caller on the line that wants to talk to you, Jeanette.
Okay.
All right.
Caller on the line. Let's bring them live. Caller calling in from area code 405. State your name and tell us where you're calling from, please.
Hi, this is Action Figure from the chat room. I have a question. I'm from Oklahoma City. My real name's Tracy, sorry. Anyway, I have a question, Jeanette, about Dominique.
Uh-huh.
I recently got a starter fox from Mike Stickler in Ohio.
Uh-huh.
And unfortunately, my rooster died. He got eaten by something. Now, I'm trying to decide whether I should just get one of a local rooster. Most of our line here in Oklahoma is out of Fred Farthing's line. Or if I should pay for shipping or go back and get another one of Mike Stickler's Dominiques. What do you know about the genetics? Would it be better to stick with the further away flock, or do you know?
Well, it depends. Like, we're just getting started with the Dominique Club, so I'm not familiar with all the different genetics within that breed or the bloodlines. But, you know, I'd ask, well, how many of those Stickler birds are out there? Are there a lot of them? And if there are, then maybe it would be of interest to you to get an outside rooster and see how that'll work for you. If there are enough birds out there to continue that bloodline, the Stickler bloodline, then it wouldn't be a bad thing to go get an outside rooster or cockerel. But if you're going to pay that kind of money, I'd make sure that it's, you know, breeding quality and that, you know, the person you're buying from knows what they're looking for. And, you know, the current president of the Dominique Club could certainly help you with that. And, she's familiar with the bloodlines and trying to organize the, the breeders to get together to talk about recovering the, the production traits. She's particularly concerned about, you know, birds getting too big because a lot of the Dominiques at show are starting to get way too big and not meant to be birds. I'd encourage you to contact Tracy. Do you know Tracy Rodenbach?
Yes, I do.
Yeah, talk to her about it. And she's really got a good handle on the issues with the breed and who you might go to. And I'm sure she'd be more familiar with the bloodlines than I at this point.
Okay. Well, thanks a lot.
You're welcome.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye.
All righty. It's coming up. This is a good time for a break. It's coming up on 1 o'clock. So we're talking with Jeanette Behringer with the American Livestock Breeds Conservancy. And we'll continue this chat as soon as we return after this short break. Stay with us, folks. When you need an incubator, think Brensea, the incubation specialist. Brensea has been a world-leading manufacturer of incubators for over 30 years. Incubators from 7 to 380 eggs with high-quality electronic and digital controls, including precise humidity control and programmable egg turning, all at surprisingly affordable prices. Visit them online at Brensea.com. Brensea spelled B-R-I-N-S-E-A. That's Brensea.com or call 1-888-667-7009.
Enter the coupon code WHISPER at checkout and save 10% on their incubators, brooders, egg handlers, and other incubation accessories. When you need an incubator, think Brinsea, technology you can trust.
You have the chickens, the coop, and the run, but do you have the egg cartons? Don't put your beautiful farm fresh eggs in any old used grocery store egg carton. Impress your friends with your very own custom labeled egg cartons from eggcartons.com. They have a large selection of custom egg cartons, stamps, and labels to choose from. Pick out your new custom egg cartons at eggcartons.com. That's eggcartons.com.
Hey ladies, do you have a hard time finding the perfect gift for that animal lover on your list? I did, but not anymore. I shop at HobbyHillFarm.com. They have a great selection of dog, cat, horse, and chicken gifts that are not only cute, but affordable too. Check them out at HobbyHillFarm.com and become a Facebook fan at Facebook.com/HobbyHillFarm to receive updates on new products and special discounts. I just know you're going to love HobbyHillFarm.com. I do.
Mount Healthy Hatcheries has been a hatching tradition for over 80 years. Home of the healthiest chicks, Mount Healthy Hatcheries offers a wide selection of bantams, turkeys, guineas, ducks, pheasants, and of course, meat birds and layers. Order online at mounthealthy.com. That's mthealthy.com, or give them a call at 1-800-451-5603. Don't forget to ask about their free bonus chicks offer. Mount Healthy Hatcheries, home of the healthiest chicks.
Established in 1957, GQF has become the name to trust when it comes to quality products and superior customer service. GQF offers a wide range of poultry products, including incubators, brooders, feeders, waters, and much, much more. Give them a call at 912-236-0651 or visit them online at GQFradio.com. That's GQFradio.com.
How would you like a punch in the beak?
This looks like a job for
Super Chicken.
You get the super sauce. I'll don my super suit.
Alrighty, thank you very much for staying with us today on Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer. We're talking with Jeanette Behringer with the American Livestock Breeds Conservancy. Let me go ahead and bring her back live. And Pat, you are back live now as well. And since we're coming back, let's go ahead and give away today's prize. We've got a package of 25 egg cartons. They're the ever so popular vintage style egg cartons. Very, very popular. They're selling like hotcakes over there at eggcartons.com. And I will pick the winning caller. We'll pick winning caller number 10, just a good even number there, 10, call number 10. And Pat actually has the question. And we know that Jeanette has the answer, so so we'll make sure that we have the right answer for the contestants today. So we're going to, you know what I'm going to do, Pat? I think coming up here we'll have to do fun with this. We'll have a series of three or four questions. We'll get a caller who happens to be male, and we'll get a caller who happens to be female, and then we'll have a little male versus female contest one of these days for a prize. So I think I've heard that done before. We just may have to try something fun like that. But Pat has the question. We'll take caller number 10, 347-637-3237, 347-637-3237, caller number 10, if you want to try to win these 25-pack of vintage-style egg cartons from eggcartons.com. And, Pat, you've got the question.
Okay. Well, thank you, Mr. The question is where will the 2012 Marsh Tacky horse races take place? Where will the 2012 Marsh Tacky horse races take place? That's it. There you go. And it was said several times on the show today.
It has been.
mentioned several times.
Yeah.
You think Jeanette?
And I wish I could go. I want to go. Darn. We got to figure out how to get down there.
Oh, come on. Hop on your Learjet.
Right.
Get your entourage all ready, your bodyguards and your armored vehicle.
Well, you can plan for it for next year.
That's true. That seems so far away, though. I mean, if really wanted to, I could hop in the car and drive down. I mean, it's not that terribly far down to that beach.
Yeah.
Yeah, down to that beach. Well, you get paid to go, though, Jeanette. That's really cool. I like that.
Yeah, well, you know, I tie things into it, too. I'm evaluating a chicken flock on the way, too, so try and bundle things up whenever I'm on the road, as you know.
Oh, absolutely. Multitasking and multi-purposing.
Oh, yeah. So I'm actually going to be on the road again. I think next week we're delivering hogs to Kentucky for our swine project, and I've got some mule foots and some guinea hogs that are going to make their way to Berea College that's going to be growing them out for us as part of a meat study on all the heritage breeds that we're raising.
That's exciting.
Got mule foots and Gloucester Old Spots coming in from Kansas, and then I got some Tamworths from South Carolina, and then they should all be on the farm. We'll have pigs from every breed that we work with on the CPL, except the Choctaws and the Saddlebacks, just because those are very problematic to try and get a hold of any of those, so we weren't able to include them.
Those guinea hogs, man, they lay a big egg.
Yeah. Yeah, they were just featured in the Charleston Food and Wine Fest last week. I mean, they're really the darlings of Charleston right now. The chefs really love them. And I was just talking to a producer out in Kansas that says he can't get a buck a pound for them. He can't give them away. Matter of fact, the guineas that he got on his farm, somebody dropped off because they didn't know what to do with them. You know, because out in the Midwest, people wouldn't even consider eating a hog that small. But over here, they're actually commanding pretty good prices and doing quite well over here on the East Coast. So it's, again, you know, going back to that whole cultural identity and in the Midwest, the guinea hog really had no place. But here in the East, they were a very common farm hog for a long period of time around here. And because of that cultural connection, people grab onto their story and get enchanted with the whole history and the pigs. And you know, they're really quite successful here. So, you know, again, it's that whole big picture. You got to look at all these things to understand how to conserve a breed. And, you know, if you want to conserve the guinea hog, right now the Southeast or the East Coast, for that matter, is kind of the place to be for marketing and raising guinea hogs.
Wonderful.
Pat, how about, if you would, repeat the question, Pat.
Okay, the question is where in 2012 will the Marsh Tacky horse races be held? So where this year are they going to hold the Marsh Tacky horse race? And Jeanette gets to go, and I don't.
And it's been mentioned on the radio show, this radio show already about five times.
And it's on the internet. You can Google it and find the information on the internet. In fact, I posted it on the internet in the chat room.
We'll see who's paying attention.
You're so funny. Oh dear.
And you can call in and hang on a minute. I've got.
That's for everyone. That's because Andy does not know the answer. That's why he's saying that.
No, I know the answer. That post.
Oh, you do now. Okay. I take it back.
Yeah, it was in the message there. I'm trying to deal with. My wife brought me a barbecue sandwich, and I got barbecue all over my laptop.
Oh no.
False. Okay. Actually, I was going to do something here. I was going to say, call in, you know, you may or may not know the right answer. If you don't worry. The worst that could happen would be, or, you know, you just might hear something like, let's see, this one actually is for Pat.
La 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 la.
But and why is that for me?
But actually, this one is probably more appropriate for you, Pat. If you actually win, then this one will be Pat's favorite.
Congratulations, congratulations, congratulations.
I love that. I love that. Yeah. Gomer Pyle.
Gomer. Good old Gomer. Okay, we'll go to the phone lines here. Caller number 10. Scroll down here. Golly. I guess beggars can't be choosy. She does a great job and brings me lunch, but barbecue will have to be taken off the lunch list for the during the radio show next.
Well, you could have lunch after the show.
She just brings it to me. So no, because see, after the it's just our schedule. Doing a tag team with Caleb, because this morning I had him all. Morning, she had a class she taught at 10, and then a meeting afterwards. She's in a meeting now, and then she's got homeroom at 3, and then a conference, I think, at 4. So let's kind of grab what we can when we can. Here we go. We're going to the phone lines right now. Of course, you want to make sure you haven't won anything from eggcartons.com in the last 30 days.
I haven't won anything in a year.
Going to, here we go. We've got calling in from... Oh, where'd my mouse go? It's covered in barbecue. caller
609,
you're on the air. 609, you're on the air with Andy and Pat and Jeanette. State your name. Tell us where you're calling from, please.
It's Dragonfire from South Jersey.
Hey, Dragon.
Boise. Hey, how's
from
everything?
Jersey.
Hey, use guys up there in New Jersey. Use guys.
Yeah.
It's use guys.
Yeah, use guys.
You think the answer is?
In Hilton Head, South Carolina, on, Caligny Beach?
Jeanette, you're the judge.
That is correct.
All righty. Congratulations. How cool is that? 25 vintage egg cartons from our good friends over at cartons.com will be heading your way. You just have to remember to send me an email, chickenwhisperer@chickenwhisperer.net, chickenwhisperer@chickenwhisperer.net, and put egg cartons in the subject line, and then name, address, phone number, and email in the email itself. So, and we appreciate that, and congratulations up there to all you guys in New Jersey. We can continue talking with Jeanette Berenger now. And, of course, Pat, you're back live as well about the Marsh Tacky. And we talked a little bit about Dominique's and the Java Project. Anything else on the agenda for today, Jeanette?
Not off the top of my head, other than to, remind folks about the conference we're going to have in November. And we're also having an upcoming workshop in May. The first weekend of May is going to be here in Pittsboro, North Carolina. And this one's actually got a focus for veterans that are just coming out of service and or been out of service and interested in getting involved with heritage breeds. Interestingly, we were told by the Farmer Veteran Coalition, which is a group that works with vets wanting to get into farming, and they said that of the people that are interested in working with livestock, they almost always want to work with heritage breeds. And so we decided to offer this introductory class into heritage breeds, and we're going to have some folks there that will also talk about programs that are available for veterans. And it will be open to the general public after April 1st if we have some seats available. It's going to be a real good introductory class into the different species, and we'll dedicate about 45 minutes to an hour to help people understand the basics of heritage sheep or heritage horses, heritage poultry, hogs. We're going to go down the list of each of the species to kind of give an overview of, the different breeds that are out there, how to multitask with these different breeds. What are they good for? And at least that's what my husband asks me every day with the horses, and I always am able to give him some kind of answer, keep him around. But they, you know, there are just a lot of folks that are don't quite know where to begin, and so that's what this class is all about. And it'll be right here in the epicenter of everything cool and hip in agriculture, which is here in Pittsboro, North Carolina. And we're real excited about it. We've got some great community support, and for vets that are wanting to come long distances, we actually have some assistance available for flights, and we have some scholarships available for folks that might not be able to afford to come. And, you know, we've got a limited number of seats, so it's on a first-come, first-served basis. But as I said, right now it's only open to vets, but after April 1st it will be open to the general public.
Wow, that's awesome. That's awesome. So how many do you have signed up?
You know, I've kind of lost count because I keep getting calls every day. You know, I'd say we're probably a quarter of the way filled. You know, we just started getting calls last week when they, you know, the press release went out, and I was just contacted by some of the folks at Fort Bragg that want to network. And yeah, I'd probably say about a quarter of the class is filled right now, so there's still time to register, but we're hoping to have about 100 people at the workshop. We're going to actually have an all-day class on Friday and then split the group up with different tracks at farms, and we'll have a poultry track, a small ruminant track, and a cattle track, and you have to choose one of those, and that'll be a half-day on-farm learning from people that are successful with their rare breed enterprise and have lunch at the farm. And so it'll be a lot of fun.
It will be a lot of fun. Well, yep. A lot of fun. Good for you. And how many ALBC staff are going? Is it mostly in-house, or are you pulling out trainers?
Actually, we've got, you mean as far as speakers?
Yeah.
Yeah, so there's a couple of staff members that are speaking, but we really wanted to bring people in that have on-the-ground experience with specific species. And so we've brought speakers that have farms locally, like, you know, Gray Moore's coming up to do the pig talk, and he's got an incredibly successful pig business going. And
nice.
We have Jeff Wilkins, who is a master breeder of red poll cattle. And if you can appreciate a good body on cattle, you just drop at the sight of his cattle. They're beautiful. I mean, the bodies are just something else. And so he's going to give the cattle track. And then we have a local woman who has a very successful business with heritage chickens and heritage ducks up here in the Raleigh area. And she's going to be talking. And then we're going to do the farm visit on her place the following day. And, you know, so we've got a wide variety of folks that are coming to do the talks here. But we really wanted to have people that, you know, have successful businesses with the animals so they can talk from experience and you know, the ins and outs of production and marketing. And so I think it's going to be a great program. And, you know, and the farm visits are going to be a lot of fun. We have Anna Ray Hodgen, who's going to be talking about sheep, and she's a master breeder of Tunis sheep, and she is just a character. We're going to have a blast with Anna Ray, and we're going to follow up visiting her farm the following day. And it's you know, it's going to be a diverse group of people. And I'll weigh in on horses, you know, because I've been so involved with horses and actually donkeys these days, so I'll be doing the equine track. Yeah, that's pretty much it in a nutshell. And all the info is on our website for anybody interested in learning more about that program.
Okay, excellent, excellent, excellent. Well, you're going to have a busy year.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that's great. That's
yeah.
Great. Okay. Whisper, you have anything? Any other questions for Jeanette?
No, that sounds fabulous. Another great show with Jeanette and the American Livestock Breeds Conservancy. We ask you, you know, check them out and join them. They do great works, and your money will go a long way, and you get lots of stuff in the mail from them, and updates, and the big catalog, and the whole nine yards. And visit them online if you would. www.albc www.albc-usa.org. That's www.albc-usa.org. And Jeanette, thank you very much for joining us again today. And God, next time we talk, we'll be going, where did March go? April's already here.
I know. Well, thank you very much. Always a pleasure to talk with you.
Yeah, thank you so much for joining us. Have a great day.
All right, you too. Bye.
Bye-bye.
Alrighty, lots of great information, and Pat posted that more information how you can get in touch with Jeanette and the ALBC Research and Technical Program team there at ALBC on our in our little chat room there. So we've already given away our awesome prize today, thanks to eggcartons.com, and I had some 25 egg cartons. We'll have another prize tomorrow. We'll have another prize on Thursday, and we'll have a lot of prizes on Friday to give away. Not to mention. Let's see, the coming Thursday, a show you're not going to want to miss. This coming Thursday, we'll welcome poultry scientist Dr. Bridget McCray. No quackery there. I'm telling you, it's factual studies of information coming from Dr. McCray. So tune in this Thursday, because our topic is going to be something that should concern all of us, especially tis the season with getting baby chicks now. Vaccinations. Yep, this Thursday we'll be talking all about vaccinations, the who, the what, the when, the why, the how, if, when, all of that good stuff, and the different types that are out there. So you're not going to want to miss that show again. Bring that Chicken Whisperer spiral notebook with you that we recommend you have, so you can take all of these notes. And it's a great show this coming up Friday, all about vaccinations. I was just looking over at iTunes, Pat, and we are currently number 3 and number 4 and number 12. We've got a 3, almost 3 in the top 10 for this week. It's updated several times per day, so it fluctuates, but I just went over and checked during the commercial break, and currently we're number 3, number 4, and number 12. So we've got 3 in the top 20 and almost 3 in the top 10 for shows this week. So
And you can check that on just on iTunes.com?
Yep, iTunes, you'll have that. You can go to the specific our podcast show there, and then scroll down and then click BTR, and then you'll see all the whole outline of the top 25 episodes. Not top 25 podcasts. We normally hover around number 12 as far as that. But, yeah, and, of course, Jen downloaded some software on my laptop from Capture, whatever's on my computer screen, no matter where I'm at on or what page I'm at. So it's kind of cool. And so I just go to there and I capture that picture, and then I can post it and let everybody see without them trying to have to click through and get and join iTunes, because you got to join iTunes and all that kind of stuff to access that. So I just snap a picture of it and then post it for everybody to see, so I can send a big thank you where the big thank yous need to be, of course, which is all of our great guests that come on the show and share their expertise, and of course our great sponsors that have been sponsoring the show for a very, very, very long time, and so we got to love it. So so that's going to wrap up another show here, Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer. We thank you so much for tuning in with the American Livestock Breeds Conservancy, and we'll be another show and another day tomorrow, Wednesday. Tune in, if you would, 12 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, right here on Blog Talk Radio. Pat, take it away.
Okay. Well, another terrific Tuesday here, Whisper. Jeanette Berenger was our very special guest today. We were talking about the March tackies and breed conservations of quite a few different breeds. So it's so important, the work they're doing. Jeanette's with the American Livestock Breeds Conservancy, and you can connect with the ALBC at albc-usa.org, or their phone number is 919-542-5704. That's great. And then, hold on just a second. Yeah. So anyway, thanks to our chat room chicken ears for clicking along today, for all our listeners for listening in. And, of course, blogtalkradio.com provides the radio, chat, and video services. And, of course, Andy Schneider, the Chicken Whisperer, is the creator and the wind beneath our wings, bringing this show forward in the future. I'm Pat Forman, and from all of us, may the flock be with you, quoth the chicken, evermore. Many blessings, everybody. Oh.